Before we start the show, I have a request. If you've been a firefighter for more than a year or two, you've undoubtedly been part of a response that went horribly wrong. Well, you managed to get out of it somehow, and that's what I'm looking for. The story that can teach other firefighters a valuable lesson. After all, you can learn from experience, or you can learn from the experience of others. And in this business, the latter is much safer than the former. So let's get that lesson out to the firefighting community. Tell it on the Code 3 Podcast. Just email me, scott@code3podcast.com, and let me know you've got a story to share. And tell your brothers and sisters in the fire service how you got out of that jam.
A lot of times on the fire ground, firefighters are lucky. They have near misses or things happen. And so sometimes good luck can reinforce bad habits.
This is Code 3, the Firefighters Podcast, hosted by award-winning journalist Scott Orr. Now, here's Scott.
That's right, and I will not let Parkinson stop me. Thank you for joining me again for the return of Code 3. You are listening to the show for and about firefighters. Give me about 20 minutes and I'll give you a firefighting topic to think about, and maybe to discuss over the dinner table at your station. Now let's get started. If you're a member of a volunteer department, you've probably run into the problem of the incident commander. The issue, of course, is who's going to be the IC on a given fire ground. Now, if your volunteer department is lucky enough to have career firefighters showing up to calls with you, that problem is not so bad. Odds are that career firefighter is going to be the one who takes command of the scene. But what if your response is all volunteer? Who takes command then? That's the question we're going to examine on this edition of Code 3. My guest today is Richard Ray. He's got over 30 years in the fire service. He's both a firefighter with the Creedmoor, North Carolina Volunteer Fire Department, and his full-time job is battalion chief with the Durham, North Carolina Fire Department. He instructs on a national level as well. And Richard Ray joins me now. Thanks for being on Code 3.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here today.
It's good to have you. So how do most people get to be incident commanders on a response that's made up of volunteers?
It kind of depends on the makeup and the dynamic of the organization and the fire ground. Kind of it's a two-piece thing, right? So a lot of times it comes into who's there, who's coming, what exactly the incident type is, and how significant it is. But you know, largely in my area of the fire service, a lot of times the incident commander is just doing multiple roles, right? So they might either be running the water shuttle or they may be running the pump on the truck. And then there are some that actually are able to break away and be a true incident command, but usually they're taking care of accountability as well. So usually it's a multifunctional type thing that happens on the volunteer fire ground.
Okay, so that's reality, that's the real world, but if they're busy running the pump...
Sure. Well, the issue becomes is that, you know, we talk about multitasking just in life in general, but, you know, when you're multitasking, especially on the fire ground, your focus is pulled in two different directions. And from an incident command standpoint, you've got to be focused on what's going on the fire ground. And especially if you have firefighters operating inside of a burning building, right? There's nothing more important than than that fire ground operation if they're inside, especially if they're trying to effect a rescue or anything of that nature. But you know, I've been a part of fire grounds where the incident commander was running the truck and we made it through, we got by. But then again, I've been a part of fire grounds where the incident commander was busy and tied up and they missed critical pieces of information, which is really, it made a defining difference in the success of the fire ground, right? Because they missed the information, important facets of the fire ground were missed and the right tactics weren't utilized and the strategy wasn't met. And you know, what's unfortunate about that is that it increases our, our risk for injury and death, but also on the other side of that coin is the citizen is truly the real loser, right? Because we're there for them in that aspect, and when we're multitasking and we miss things, and you know, things don't get done in a timely fashion like they should, you know, then you start to impact the citizen. And you know, from the firefighter standpoint, you know, if you read the NIOSH 5, right, one of the NIOSH 5 is lack of incident command. And the unfortunate thing is that's truthful, right? I mean, I don't believe fire departments go out intentionally trying to not fill the necessary roles that they have, but when a volunteer firefighter has different things competing for their time, it's hard to make every incident, it's hard to make every training, it's hard to be there on every critical call, and you're going to have those calls where there's just simply not enough people to fill all the functions. Some functions have to take a back seat, and you know, I'm not necessarily opposed to an incident commander. You know, they may have to do, you know, they may have to be hands-on for a moment, but as more firefighters arrive, they need to take a step back. And I'll give you a good example. So I was involved with a rescue a couple months ago. I was the battalion chief. This was my career department. And I arrived on scene, and I had a company that was trying to effect the rescue of a person out of a car that was in the water, right? And it was three of them. They were working really hard. They needed an extra set of hands. I understand that my job on the fire ground is incident command. However, the priority of that life drove me to be hands-on, and I was hands-on until more personnel arrived. And then when more personnel arrived, I was able to take that step back and fulfill the command role. And that's kind of how I see it should, a lot of times it has to play out on the volunteer fire ground, is that if you don't have the people, sometimes there are other things that are actually more important to be done on the fire ground than even incident command. You hate to say that, because incident command provides that fire ground structure that's needed. But from time to time, you know, you get caught in those situations and hey,
you're not going to tell the person in that car, I'm sorry, I've got to stand here, I can't help get you out.
That's exactly right. Again, I've always taken the approach that, number one, I'm a firefighter first and foremost, right? So my skill set has got to reflect that. And being a firefighter first and foremost means that sometimes I've got to do task-oriented things. Now, with that in mind, knowing that, hey, when the time is right, that's when I step back into that command role. But you know, it's hard on the volunteer fire ground just simply because there's just not enough personnel. You know, there's a lot of volunteer fire departments that are able to put the firefighters on the fire ground, right? I mean, they do duty staffing and shifts and all that kind of stuff. And truthfully, it's probably organized much like a career department is. And they've got the personnel to do that. But when you take a fire department that's in a very rural area, and it's only them that's operating there for a long period of time, and it's maybe five or six firefighters, it's hard to fill all those roles of command, fire attack, search, ventilation, writ. I mean, you just can't do it. And what you have to do is you have to prioritize what's the most important thing that I can do right now. And that priority starts with, what action do I take that saves the most lives, right? What action is that? And, you know, sometimes it might mean that incident commander has to be on the nozzle for a few minutes until another firefighter can get there to where they can step back and oversee. But so sometimes it's a combination of all of that. Largely what it lands to a lot of times is just whoever that senior firefighter is that's had the most experience a lot of times ends up being your incident commander.
I'll be back with more right after this. If you own a business, large or small, I've got an idea for you. Why not advertise in this podcast? After all, if your market is members of the fire service, they're already listening to Code 3. And Code 3 is returning to a two-a-week schedule this summer. The price to speak directly to thousands of firefighters, company officers, and chiefs is surprisingly affordable. Reach the people you want as customers. Just email Scott at code3podcast.com and we'll get you on the air. All right, so let's say that we've got five or maybe even six guys that respond to a call. They're available. They're either at the station or they respond from their homes. Do they typically have somebody that's going to have IC training of some kind, or would it be the guy who's on a career department sometimes and then fills in as a volunteer on others? Or is it just the guy who's been around the department the longest who's going to say, I'll be in charge?
So again, I think that's going to go back to the individual, right? I mean, my fire department, for example, yeah, I'm a career firefighter as well. But on my career side, my job is focused largely on being the incident commander. So when I go respond with my volunteer department, it just makes sense that I would tend to gravitate more to the command role because that's kind of what I do on a regular basis, and I'm going to have a little bit more experience, right? Where you run into the challenge is that now we've got five or six guys there that may have, among them may have a total of 10 years experience. Well, which one's got the most experience to run the fire ground, or which one's got the most experience to be on the nozzle? You know, it's got to be some quick decisions made as far as which one is more important, right?
Do you want the guy who's got the career experience working on rescue or manning a line so that it gets done efficiently? Or is it more important that he or she be the IC?
For my volunteer fire department, the good thing is that largely we have some senior guys that have that command experience and can fulfill that role. But here's the thing. You talk about training, and let's be real here. I mean, for a lot of, especially your small volunteer fire departments, they don't necessarily get the strategy and tactics training and how to organize a fire ground and that kind of stuff. They don't receive that. The large component of their command training is NIMS, and NIMS is good. NIMS has a lot of good information in it, but it's hard to apply that NIMS just to a residential house fire, right? Because you're not necessarily dealing with all the components. And NIMS gives you a good baseline, but NIMS doesn't talk about, all right, you know, how do I apply my strategy and tactics, right? How do I come up with a strategy and apply the tactics to it? And that's not something necessarily that NIMS gives you. It gives you organizational skills and that kind of stuff for the scene. But in terms of just strategy, tactics, organizing the fire ground, you know, that kind of stuff is something that I wish that there would be more training for the volunteers on.
There's a lot of outside training these days, you know, departments that put on training designed for other people to come to it.
That's right.
Or individuals who run their own training programs.
That's right.
So it's going to have to be up to them to decide, I'm going to go learn this stuff even though I don't have to, because I might need it.
That's right. And so that falls back to the drive of the individual too, right? And the culture of the fire department, because, you know, you have department leadership that encourages that outside training, encourages and pushes their members to go to the outside trainings. I mean, that's huge. The other piece of that is that there's what we're doing today, a podcast. There are a lot of good podcasts out there that you can listen to, that you can get nuggets from and that kind of stuff. But here's the thing. There's got to be an investment, right? There's got to be an investment on the part of the firefighter. They've got to want to invest themselves to be better, not just for them and their organization, but largely for the citizen, right? I mean, because ultimately that's the greatest benefactor of it all, is the citizen. So there's got to be an investment. And I would also say that, you know, there's got to be an investment outside of your fire department. In other words, you can get a lot of good training from within your organization, but going back to what you said, with all the stuff that's out there, the podcast, these training groups, these small conferences, these different seminars that go on, you've got to get outside of your organization and recognize that fire service is much bigger than just your area. And that in itself, when you start networking with people who are from a different organization and do things a little bit differently from you, or they have to operate differently because their staffing might be this way. These might be their resources. That's where the greatest learning comes in, and you can really get some good stuff. And not to mention the fact, the whole networking piece. Now you've got somebody that you can, you know, the networking comes in, and now you've got brother and sister firefighters that you can reach out to and call and say, hey, you know, I had this. What do you think about this? What, this is what I did. Could I, you know, in your opinion, could I have done something a little different? And that's what builds the firefighter, but it's got to be an investment. And again, when that firefighter's time is so limited and they're trying to juggle and balance a lot of different things, sometimes the outside training is what get left out. It's just life, you know? So
I imagine that bad habits get passed down from those who don't have command training, but are in charge of a scene from time to time. How do we avoid that happening?
One of the things that you've got to do is you've got to have training, but here's the flip side, right? The flip side of it is that a lot of times on the fire ground, firefighters are lucky, right? They have near misses or things happen and it just seems the luck falls to the right way. And so sometimes good luck can reinforce bad habits. And that's why it's important to have the necessary training. But you've also got to take each run and learn from it, right? And try and put some command application to it. You know, even the most insignificant of calls, right? If you're trying to get some command experience to somebody that's coming up in the ranks or to a newer officer, you've got to start small. You have to crawl before you walk, and you start with the small incidents, right? Let them command it, critique it. Don't just critique the command side of it, but you got to critique the actions that were taken. And that's where being in a smaller department, you know, you're not running the calls that some of the career guys are, the larger urban departments, but you're making the most of every call you go on. And I do believe that's critical, because many times we run, you know, firefighters will run a call and they'll answer the call and everything will seem to go okay. And they come back to the station and go home, and then they go to the next one. And there's nothing really ever talked about on each call, but I believe there's learning to be had at every call you go on, especially when you're trying to learn the command side of things.
Seems like a debrief could help avoid that thing where you mentioned that you got lucky, so you try it again the next time and it may not work the next time.
That's exactly right. And the debrief doesn't have to be very long, right? It can be a quick 5 minute at the tailboard of the truck before you clear the scene, because while you're still there, you still got things you can look at. There's tangible aspects of it for the discussion. And usually firefighters are a little more honest on the fire ground about things they did right or things they did wrong. But again, it's trying to capture each moment that you're around the fire, that you're answering the call for service, that you're trying to get the most out of it. And I'll tell you, for me, that was a huge thing for me as I come through the fire service, because I didn't always get to ride the good trucks on my career job. And, and my volunteer department, you know, when I first got on, we had a little bit of fire duty, but it was, you know, it was early '90s and things were kind of coming, you know, the working incidents seemed to be not as many as they were at one time. And so, you know, you missed out on some experience there. But here's the thing. The other piece of it is also trying to capture, you know, our older, maybe retired firefighters, right, that come back to the volunteer station for a meal or come back and they come around to see what's going on. Are the younger firefighters picking their brain? Do the younger firefighters know who these retirees are and what they gave to the volunteer department? You know, and it's trying to capture all aspects, because that's where the learning takes place. And, you know, I used to bend my dad's ear a lot, and still do, about different calls that he went on, because he was a firefighter in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. Well, he's still a firefighter today. He's got 60 years in the service. But when he was in his heyday, right, I mean, there was just so much that I could, you know, grasp from him, just just simply talking to him. You know, I would also say, you know, you talk about training. FSRI has that online training academy, and I can't say that enough. I mean, that's free resources for any fire department where you can, and it's all focused in on our fire ground functions, right? From fire attack to search to ventilation, talks about basement fires, attic fires, coordinated fire attack. All that stuff is free resources that we can use, but then we can, not only are we just using the information that they're giving us, but we take that information and apply it to our organization with our resource model and deployment and our staffing and how to make our fire grounds better.
What's the number one mistake that an inexperienced IC is likely to make, and how can you avoid it happening?
Oh, good question. I would say probably the number one mistake would be that first action on the fire ground, whether it's initiating, whether it's doing a search or the attack line, right? Which one do you need to do first? And how do we avoid that? Well, you have to be able to read the building, read the fire, gather information. But what happens when now you've got a victim showing from a second story window, and you've got to effect a ladder raise, getting it to the window, and it's just two or three of you, right? So how do you manage that versus water on the fire? So those are the initial decisions. And when we start talking about fire attack, I would encourage that to be the initial action a lot of times, just simply because it does make the environment better. That line position is going to be huge. And for the IC to make that call, you've got to make the call on the correct place to put the attack line. And, you know, how do you weigh that against quick water on the fire, getting good water on the fire, versus knowing that the line needs to be, if any way possible, between our victims and the fire? You know, and the problem is that for that inexperienced IC, at best, you have limited information on arrival, right? And you're trying to make split-second decisions with incomplete information. There's times where you get it right, and there's times where you get it wrong. And the way that you have to get it right is you got to be able to understand fire dynamics and building construction and how they relate to each other. And then once you have a good understanding of that, you then move over to the firefighter rescue survey and look at where we're finding our victims. And then you can start formulating the right plan. But I'll also will tell you too, for many firefighters, they're going to fall back on experience and what worked for them at a similar incident, right? And really that's the reality, is that they're going to go back to whatever worked for them. And if it was luck and it worked out, it may not work out this time.
And Richard Ray, that's it for this show. Thanks for talking with me today on Code 3.
Thank you for having me. Yes, sir. Appreciate it. Enjoyed it.
So there you have it. Richard's definitely an opinionated guy. What do you think? How do you make sure the IC on your fire ground knows what he's doing? You can leave your comments on our website at code3podcast.com/volunteerIC. One word, volunteer IC. Check it out. All right, that's it. That's all for this edition of Code 3. Thank you for listening. I'll be back next time with more, and I hope you'll join me. I'm Scott Orr, and until then, stay safe.
To contact us, get more information on today's show, or to subscribe to the podcast, go to code3podcast.com.